Public meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry to order. First, perform a roll call. Nils Christofferson.
Here.
Sandy Deacon-Williams. Cindy is not here. She will be, due to a personal family reason, she will be likely calling in at some point at the meeting today. Joe Justice.
Here.
Jim Kelly.
Here.
Brenda McComb.
Here.
Mike Rose.
Here.
And I'm Tom Imeson. I'm here, so we do have a quorum. A couple of housekeeping matters, just as a reminder, as is the case for all of our meetings now, this public meeting will be live streamed all day. It would be helpful for people to silence their electronic devices for the duration of the meeting. Also, we will have an executive session at 11 a.m. this morning. Purpose of the session will be to confer with legal counsel regarding information that is exempt by law from public inspection and the board's rights and duties related to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the public are not allowed to join. We will break for lunch after the executive session is done and then reconvene the board meeting at 1 p.m. Also, in order to ensure that the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, public comment for agenda topics will be limited to no more than 30 minutes and received upon conclusion of the topic's presentation. A sign-up sheet is available for public comment on a first-come, first-served basis. For the Forest Practices Act Rule Enforcement Policy Review topic, we have scheduled a block of time for invited testimony from the two stakeholder groups who have regularly participated in the topic, and then that will be followed by general public comment to ensure that the general public has a fair opportunity to speak. We have requested, as we always do, that anyone participating in the invited comment refrain from using the public comment time after that. So first, we have a consent agenda. Is there a motion for the approval of consent items A through C?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next, we will go to State Forester Peter Doherty for his comments.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning, folks. I'm going to provide a brief update on our budget outcomes from the legislative session, an overview of the board's strategic planning process, and an update on our shared stewardship agreement. Before I get started, I would like to say I'm thankful that this is a July meeting that I didn't have to think about canceling or shorten because of fire season. It's the first July meeting that that's happened. You'll hear more about, we haven't hit the heart of our fire season. You'll hear more about that this morning. It seems like every time I come before you, I also talk about executive team changes. And so somebody was thoughtful enough to give you a new roadmap of where we are with our executive team. And we do have one new member. Tricia Kershaw joined us as our Director of Human Resources. She brings 18 years of experience to HR, and she has a bachelor's in business management, so should really help us improve our HR processes. So moving on to the legislative session, it wrapped up Sunday evening, June 30th, and our legislatively adopted budget largely reflects a continuation of our current service level. I say it's better than I had hoped it would be at the start of the session, and less than I had hoped in additional capacity. The budget establishes a special purpose appropriation in the emergency fund to pay for fire severity and fire insurance. As in previous biennia, it included $6 million of general fund, $4 million for severity, and $2 million for the catastrophic wildfire insurance policy. In addition, it added $2 million for supplemental fire program personnel costs due to extended fire season. This is a new allocation and allows us to get reimbursed when we exceed our base fire budgets, which has been happening over the past 7 years. No position authority came for it, so it is an additional capacity. It's just to cover the extra overtime costs that we're experience, as you know, from our discussions of the fire program. The fire protection budget also had $3.2 million of general fund appropriation and an increase of $500,000 for other funds for the 2017-19 biennium to pay for the premium costs for the 19 fire season. So we had to pay that in advance, and they covered that cost. On the private forest side, the budget maintained the current service level and the current funding structure. The governor's budget did included a change in the current 60-40 split of general fund and harvest tax revenues that cover the Forest Practice Act administration. They recommended shifting that to 50-50. The approved harvest tax bill maintains the current 60-40 structure that we've had. For agency administration, the budget established two accountant positions to work on fire finance and FEMA collections, and a business improvement position to focus on systems modernization. These positions were largely created using existing vacancies and by utilizing line items on our reduction list. The restructuring, though, will improve our capacity to address fire financial processing. So that was nice. The bright side of the budget came in state forest. The budget included the necessary position adjustments to fully implement one of State Forest Division's largest business improvement projects. The division is making strategic changes to the way it accomplishes its core business and priority initiatives to increase efficiency. The position adjustments will allow the division to finish organizing its workforce around those business changes, resulting in a more nimble, efficient workforce. The budget also included the necessary authorization to fully implement log sort sales on State Forest. Again, good news on the State Forest financial viability front. And the budget also included the restoration of the Common School Fund personal services funding. There was also an end of session bill that included allocations for the department. But I'd like to be clear, as with our budget and harvest tax, the end of session bill has not been signed by the governor yet. For state forests, the bill included $200,000 in general funds for the purpose of purchasing approximately 160-acre timber tract adjacent to the Willamette National Forest Opal Creek Scenic Recreation Area in the Santiam Forest for addition to the Santiam Forest. For private forests, the bill included $1.7 million of general fund for the purpose of reducing the spread of sudden oak death. The bill also included technical adjustments for the issuance costs and debt service related to general obligation bonds for the West Oregon District Toledo facilities replacement. And finally, the bill appropriated $250,000 of general fund to the governor's office for the purpose of providing administrative support to the governor's council on wildfire. So while we did not have any reductions in capacity, we also did not get any additional capacity to address the increased severity of fire seasons. These challenges were identified in the Secretary of State audit and the fire program review. There were two competing proposals going around the Capitol for additional capacity, but neither had public hearings on them. And stakeholders had different views as to which positions from our policy option package should be included in their package. Finally, the funding package to pay for it was a fund shift in our base fire protection system that would undermine our east side rate relief policy, putting us in the position of being unable to support the proposal. So while we didn't take reductions, we did not make any progress to address the sustainability of our organization. Questions on funding? Moving on, as I discussed at the last meeting, the board will be initiating a strategic planning cycle in September. The September meeting will focus on assessment of Oregon's forest conditions and issues to help the board focus their work over the next 2 years. We will include a summary of values that Oregonians have for our forests. This was presented in April. We'll include a recap, bring you information that shows a trend on a variety of resources. While the September meeting primarily focuses on the assessment, the meeting will also include the OSU College of Forestry Dean's Initiative Program and the Siskiyou Streamside Protection Review. Because of the additional topics, we have shifted the State Forest HCP FMP update topic to November. And I want to be clear, the HCP FMP process timeline has not changed. We're just moving when we're given the update to the board. The September meeting assessment feeds into the board's October retreat. The morning of the retreat will focus on the forestry program for Oregon's, the board's strategy for sustaining Oregon's public and private forest. The afternoon will focus on the department's strategic plan and our two-year strategic initiatives. These initiatives influence board work plans and the development of policy option package and legislative concepts for the 2021 legislative session. The board's strategic plan, the forestry program for Oregon, guides the department and helps align the board and the department's policy direction. The department looks to the strategy for guiding our work, and we plan to gauge your interest in revising it. Some of the comments in the board self-evaluation, including in the consent agenda, indicates a desire to reset and gain alignment on core priorities. And so at the October retreat, we'll focus on the board's values in the strategic plan as values guide how science informs policy. In addition, the board does not have any explicit values now about tribal involvement, diversity, equity, and inclusion, or a safe and respectful work environment. I think those are, you know, pretty common values to have for a modern organization. So at the November meeting, we'll ask you to affirm a decision on revising the forestry program for Oregon, since decisions are not made at the October retreat. Also in November, we're planning to hold a science and policy workshop related to the strategic planning process. As you know, all natural resource issues today are complex. Our understanding of those issues and the information change and evolve while we're trying to solve the problem. The issues and solutions are transdisciplinary in nature. There may be a paucity of data, and often there are conflicting scientific results. These topics are emotionally charged, involve stakeholders with competing values, and there's a lot at stake. Our intention for the science and policy workshop is to create a forum in which the board can develop a common understanding regarding how science can inform policy, the state of science on a range of policy topics, and the need and challenges in making policy decisions in the context of incomplete knowledge and conflicting scientific results. We'll be sending out workshop goals and desired outcomes for your review and feedback later in the summer, so be on the lookout for an email. And then in January, we bring back the draft board work plans emerging from discussions in September and October for your review and further discussion and refinement. And we'll use your discussion in January to guide adjustments to the work plan, and then in March, we'll bring your revised work plans back for approval. And finally, I sent you an email on this, and I put a copy of the shared stewardship. But the good news is our shared stewardship agreement has been reviewed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That review was required because the signature line includes Secretary Sonny Perdue. They did not request any changes from the draft agreement we developed in partnership with the Forest Service and the Governor's Office. Unfortunately, the secretaries will be unable to travel to Oregon, so Undersecretary Jim Hubbard will be here to sign on his behalf. And we're currently working on the logistics for the signing ceremony, and we will be sending out more details on that in early August. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, and any comments from board members? Jim.
Okay, I've got two issues I wanted to talk about. One is that, you know, I'm the board liaison to the audit committee and following up on the response. We just recently reviewed The response on the Secretary of State's 2016 audit regarding the militia approach and its effect on the agency and all. And I think it's important to publicly acknowledge, I mean, a lot of good work has been done, a lot of planning has been done, but over and over, the actual solutions were going to depend upon the new positions that didn't get funded. And so we've got a situation where, I think there's still some good ongoing work, but essentially this is, I believe, being sort of bureaucratically put to bed. But most of the issues are still there, and until we can find a way to solve that. And right now the department doesn't have the resources and the people to do that. And correct me if I'm wrong, and I just want to make sure that we all understand that. And it came up in our meeting, you know, that's also important for department staff to recognize and not just be cynical. Okay, we did this and nothing happened. Well, in certain ways, that's true for real obvious reasons. The other issue that I just wanted to bring up, as board members, we often get written testimony that comes in very late, typically a lot of times the day before our board meetings. Now, if that's a one or two page document and it gets to us, we may have a chance to read it and digest it, or sometimes just glance at it. This is common. It's kind of a frustrating occurrence, but a common occurrence. And sometimes the same testimony is then covered in person, and that's fine. Last night, apparently yesterday, OFIC through Stoll Reeves Law Firm got to us a 36-page, essentially almost legal document that was delivered to me and I assume my fellow board members at 8:36 last night. And I think Hillary and staff here did all they could, as they always do. I, as a former business person and somebody who, has been members of business groups and also formed a business group at one point, I would be hopping mad if I was an OFIC member, because everybody deserves a voice and for us as board members to be able to review both sides of these arguments. And if you're an OFIC member, you paid a lot of money. Stoll Reeves is a great firm, I'm sure, to get that document that none of us, I assume, have had a chance to do anything but maybe quickly scan. So it's one thing to give us a one pager at the last minute. It's a whole other thing to give a 36-page document. So I know I sound like a scold, and I guess I am one today. So for there.
I would like to respond to your first comment. Yeah, that's why I highlighted the fact that we had no additions to address that capacity issue. That will remain forefront, and going into September and October, and particularly the October retreat where you prioritize initiatives and policy option packages, that's where we can have a really good discussion on strategies for moving forward and how do we want to move forward. And so I appreciate you wanting to keep that at the forefront of the discussion.
Toby. Yeah, just real quick update for the board. I got a chance for the first time to attend the EQC meeting in Enterprise last week, and I was introduced to that commission. I'm the liaison from this board to that commission, so that was a great chance to meet with those folks close to my home, which was convenient. And I met separately with Wade Mosby, who's their liaison to our board, and we spoke about the Siskiyou's work, the work this board, and the process that we're working together in related to the Siskiyou. So I just wanted to give the board just an update that I'm engaging in that process and engaging that commission. Thanks.
Very briefly, last week I attended my first OWEB board meeting in Klamath Falls and found it to be a day and a half of really excellent discussion, collaboration, multi-agency issues, many of which interfaced with issues that we deal with here on this board. So I just found it to be a really excellent experience. Thank you.
We also have 10 people who have signed up for public testimony. This is the time we take for folks who are appearing here not on an item on our agenda. To accommodate everybody, I hope you will summarize your comments this morning, and in no case go longer than 3 minutes, and we'll help you with that because there will be a light that is green, and then it's going to turn yellow saying it's almost time, and then red, at which point we'll need to move along. So we have 10 people. We'll take you five at a time. The first five are Glenna Gray, Barbara Rippey, Craig Mackey, Jay Halliday, and Justin Price. Would you like to all come forward? And just by starting, just state your name and affiliation if you have one, and we'll move right along.
Good morning. My name is Glenna Gray. I am involved with the North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection. I live in Nehalem on the North Oregon coast. On the coast, it breaks your heart to drive around and witness on a daily basis the destruction of Oregon's natural, healthy forests. On the coast, there are no longer any rolling vistas of lovely, multi-layered forest canopy. On the coast, the water that feeds our watersheds has often been poisoned, carries silt into salmon habitat, has dried up. Indeed, the drinking water sources of many people on the coast have been destroyed. If you walk up into one of these logging blasts, you notice most of all the silence. The water has been diverted who knows where. The animals have fled. The birds have left for healthy homes. And it's hot, much too hot for reef growth, too hot to shade water for salmon, too hot to drink. As a board, isn't it time for you to change the Oregon Forest Practices Act to bring forest management standards at least up to the levels of Washington and California? Oregon used to be known as a green state, no longer. I'm going to include a paragraph from my friend Rich Felley, who's the general manager of the Neoconning Water District in Neoconning. What you're looking at is a 2018 image of the mountains around my home. The red dots are clear cuts from last year. The yellow dots are clear cuts from this year and ongoing. As Rich Felley says in his letter, my question initially is simple. Who is in charge and what the hell is going on? Close the loopholes within the act that benefit so few while negatively impacting so many. Ban or greatly limit clear cutting of steep slopes in high rainfall and slide prone regions. Move to longer rotations and more thinning. Do not allow logging across annual streams and spraying across dry stream beds. You are in charge of protecting these resources for the future, not assuring that a few private landholders can reap rewards in the short term. Thank you.
My name is Barbara Rippey, and I too am from the North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection. And you talked about values. Well, we're all up here because we're Oregonians, and you're speaking about our values. We are at a crossroads. Things must change. You must be the change. I live on the Oregon coast in Manzanita at the base of Neoconning Mountain, the outflow of the Nehalem River. We are surrounded by miles of clear cuts that are sprayed to death with multiple times over. Our neighbors in Rockaway have been graced with a watershed that is so damaged, it's barely functional. Silt gathers in the river, yes, from the unrelenting decimation of forest soils laid bare by clear cutting. Water no longer soaks into the soil. It races down the slopes, creating erosion, and into the rivers. Our once magnificent forests are replaced by tree farms of monocropped trees. A tree farm is not a forest. We're at a tipping point, and only you can make a difference. You need to make the big changes that are needed in stream buffers, stopping toxic spraying, stopping cuts on extremely steep slopes. Forests need deference, not decimation. We need them intact, and it is your job to figure out how. And soon, please be courageous for the future. Thank you.
My name is Craig Mackey, and I also live in the Nehalem Watershed District. And I'm going to go off on a different topic. We live in one of the most beautiful states in the Union and one of the most beautiful places on Earth. People come from all over to join Oregonians in one of our favorite pastimes, camping. One can hardly find an open campsite in the summer. A month ago, I made reservations at a small Tillamook County campground, Whalen Island. It is small, quaint campground with few amenities, no electric, no water hookups, just a small rustic bathroom. It now costs $22 a night plus $11 reservation fee to make the reservation for two nights come to $72. I'm a senior on a fixed income. My wife and I cannot afford to get on a plane to travel. I have not camped at Whalen Island for a number of years, so I was shocked at this fee. The state campgrounds in Oregon also charge around $35 a night to camp. So where does that leave seniors and people below the poverty level? And is this going to cause a great deal of illegal camping in our forests, creating added fire dangers and litter that is not patrolled or picked up? In the past few years, I've seen more and more people pull off the highway on 101 to sleep in the waysides at night. Is this also because our campground fees are now so high? And does the county have to incur more costs to patrol and clean up after these campers? I understand that costs have gone up and Tillamook County, as well as the state, has to charge more for camping. But I recently have learned that the timber industry has worked themselves into a position of paying very little to Oregon for cutting our forests. They have not paid any income tax since 2005 and only pay $2 per acre for cutting and property tax. And this money goes to OFRI, who channels it back to the timber industry for advertising, et cetera. Recently, a very nice, glossy, three-fold brochure was passed around Tillamook County expounding the benefits of the timber industry. The only money we get from our forests is when the state of Oregon harvests one of your properties. The monies from that get split between the counties for county needs and the state for state expenses. For years, the forest industry did give part of their profits to run the schools and other county needs. What I'm asking is that some of this money goes back into the Oregon counties to help fund our schools, our roads, and our camping.
Good morning. My name is Jay Halliday, longtime resident of Oregon, live permanently in the Portland area, and my wife and I have a family retreat out between Arcadia State Beach and Hug Point. Thanks for providing a forum where I can discuss the proposed ODF Norristown Heights timber sale. This decision was made to sell timber rights of this 77-acre parcel known as Norristown Heights. My testimony follows an email that I sent to you on July 7th, so hopefully I won't be going over. You've had time to look at that. I won't be going over other things. I have some other similarly affected neighbors testifying at the Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee later today. We are asking that this sale be postponed for 12 months. The parcel in question is right next to Highway 101, right between Arcadia State Park and Hug Point. On any weekend, you'll find these parking lots full of Oregonians and non-residents enjoying what Travel Oregon talks about as Oregon, one of Oregon's seven natural wonders, and that's the forested area along our north coast. Despite the statements of this organization about transparency and openness and inclusion, the only way a citizen could find out that this work was underway was by reading every press release from an obscure state website. To be informed on this decision means you've got to see every news release from every agency in the state. I'm a property owner directly west of the proposed sale and clear-cut area. Despite the fact that I've been an owner of that property for some time, and the fact that we were granted water rights in 1974 by the state, we had no direct contact with the ODF until July 17th, despite the fact that there could be generational changes to the environmental balance. We could have landslides on 101 and onto my property, the fact that it could damage our sole water source, and the fact that I do have water rights, means that having been contacted by the ODF not until July 17th puts us right in front of when the sale might happen. The public comment period ended May 2nd. I was informed of this potential sale and clear cut third hand from a neighbor. When the ODF finally did contact me in July, they were responding to an email like the one I sent you and like the one I sent the governor. We are asking that this be postponed for a year so that we can understand what really is going on, what research ODF has done in terms of the impact potentially on our water supply and on the ecological balance of this particular property. I'm meeting with Jason Miner this afternoon at 2:30, and hopefully we can collaborate on a solution to this, because to be honest, the outreach process has not worked at all or significantly impacted citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Imason and State Forester Doherty. My name is Justin Price, and I reside at Mystic Lane in Eugene, Oregon. I'm here to speak with you about the role Disciples of Dirt fulfills in the community regarding forestry, forest management, and community connections. I'm a board member of the Disciples of Dirt and serve as the treasurer of this organization. The Disciples of Dirt is a mountain bike club boasting members from all over the Pacific Northwest and beyond. We focus our efforts within Oregon's southern Willamette Valley. Our club was founded, and the majority of our membership live and reside in this region. Our members share a passion for mountain biking. The Disciples of Dirt are well known within the community for being stewards of our local trails and companions, and champions for improved trail access for cyclists. The Disciples of Dirt is also a tax-exempt 501c3 nonprofit organization. We provide volunteer hours for trail work for the region. As of this morning, we've logged more than 2,700 hours of labor within our region of care. This work includes clearing winter storm blowdown, removing fallen trees from roadways, building repair sections of trail damage, and building new routes for more sustainable trail. A recent highlighted project is the reroute of the floodplain restoration plan at the confluence of the Cold Creek and the Middle Fork of the Willamette. Volunteers spent the weekend working on a reroute of the Middle Fork Trail. In participation and partnership with the Middle Fork Willamette Valley Watershed Council and the U.S. Forest Service, volunteers from the Disciples of Dirt and others built beautiful new sections of trail winding through the woods. Sawyers worked on increasingly steep terrain, cleared a corridor over Coal Butte in preparation of the second half of the reroute to be constructed later this summer. Disciples of Dirt slogan is, "Let us ride." The slogan highlights the biggest challenges we face and the ideas we have around forest management. It also speaks to how we approach the relationship with land managers. Many of our members have a personal connection within the forest industry. Personally, I'm a principal and owner of a consulting engineering firm that employs nearly 100 individuals. We specialize in the design, engineering, and construction of wood products manufacturing facilities. Our members understand the true meaning of sustainable forestry and forest management. where land managers are faced with the difficult task of balancing the three main pillars of ecological, economic, and socio-cultural requirements. Our ultimate goal is to have a voice in the development of harvesting and use plans. We don't seek to halt harvest plans. We only want to make sure that the harvest plans incorporate the opportunity for recreational use by our members. We have harvest plans are near our existing trail networks. We seek to have harvest plans recognize the historical use of the trails and to consider the experience our members are seeking once the harvest is completed. Okay. Yep. I submitted it to the county. Thank you. As you continue to execute on the mission of the board in leading Oregon to implementing policies and programs that promote sustainable management of Oregon's public and private forests, we only ask that you remember that the community partnerships between volunteer organizations such as the Disciples of Dirt stand at the ready to implement the shared vision. We understand the forest benefits they provide and the ecological, economic, and social cultural requirements and are actively looking ways to support the Board of Forestry. Thank you.
First, I would like to thank you, Chairman and State Forester, for having us today and letting us say our views. My name is Grant Price, and I reside at Mystic Lane in Eugene, Oregon. I'm here to speak with you about the role of Disciples of Dirt fulfills in the community regarding forestry, forest management, and community connections. I'm a junior at South Eugene High School, where I enroll in an international high school program. As part of this program, there's a fundamental aspect to the experience in which students commit to creative activity and service, also known as the CAST system. We do this to gain confidence and knowledge in a broader world than home and school. Creative is interpreted as imagining the impossible to cover the art and other experiences that involve creative thinking. Active is defined as physical exertion contributing to a healthy lifestyle that completes academic work. Service consists of an unpaid and voluntary community contributing that leads, that learns benefits for the students and foster a generation and greater sense of community. My photography and landscape of nature inspires me to create, it inspires me for a creative version of this learning experience. My recent competition of the Oregon 24-hour mountain bike race gained me experience along the BLM trails and roads in the Bend area. This race and training for it all support my enjoyment and mountain life pursuit of mountain bike riding and exploration. For my service portion of this curriculum, I volunteer my time to support the Disciples of Dirt trail work and events. The Disciples of Dirt Mountain Bike Club allows me to understand the efforts, time, and energy that is often overlooked by casual trail users. The trail work parties provide me an opportunity to give back to the community, not just for my own interests, but for the interest of others. Most of the trail work we do are on multi-use trails, which provides access to hikers, equestrians. And occasionally OHV users. As a member of the trail work and cycling community, I would like to say thank you to the Board of the Forestry for listening to my opinions.
Good morning. I thank the board for hearing my testimony today. My name is Jed Arnold. I'm a resident of Clatsop County, and I'm employed in the forest sector. I wanted to briefly draw your attention to a recent study on economic impacts of the forest sector that I read. The study in question was published by the National Association of Forest Landowners, and it reviewed the economic contributions of the forest sector nationwide, but it also contains some insights into the continued importance of timber jobs in our state of Oregon. It showed that 42,723 Oregonians are directly employed in the forest sector, up to nearly 95,000 if indirect and induced deployment and support sectors is considered. The majority of these jobs are in rural areas of the state where family wage jobs can be hard to find. That makes the next statistic that much more meaningful. The direct payroll contribution associated with timber in Oregon is $1.2 billion. If you do the math, that correlates to an average wage of $49,000 in the sector. A decent living in most of our state, but it's particularly important in many rural areas of Oregon where housing costs are rising and the majority of available jobs are in low-wage sectors such as retail and tourism. This NAFO study relates primarily to the economic contributions of privately owned working forest lands. However, I would like to briefly highlight the contribution of our mixed-use public forest lands as well. Clatsop County receives over $32 million in direct government funding thanks to revenue from our state, from sales in the state forest. These funds underwrite some of the most vital government services in our county. $9.6 million go directly to our local schools. $2 million go directly to local law enforcement. All of this is to say that the forest sector remains a vital part of many rural communities' viability and livability, as well as in our entire state's economic health. We find the majority of rural county residents agree with this position. My employer, Hampton Lumber, recently conducted a survey of public perceptions on the North Coast of the forest sector and found that only 12% of respondents supported decreasing current harvest rates or ending forest practices in our state forests. Further, 72% viewed continued harvest in the state forest as critical to maintaining our local sawmills and the jobs those sawmills provide. Thank you.
Keep my hand on it.
There you go.
My name is Nancy Holmes, and I live at 1520 Cooper Street in Seaside. And I'm here to tell you that I believe in climate change. I believe it is real. And I think it is affecting our lives and will do so even more so in the future. Oregon has a reputation for having the best Forest Practices Act in the nation. And even though a lot of people believe that to be true, maybe Oregon does not have the best practices. I urge you to take the upcoming Oregon Forest Water Protection Act seriously. And I urge you to be clear in the information that you, in how you handle this and that you give to your associates. And I say this because things are getting a little hot, and that's not a pun, in our communities on the North Coast. Cap and trade is confused and berated, and I bet most people don't understand it. I couldn't explain it to you. But it is easy to instill and spread fear about losing your job. In the town hall 2 weeks ago with my state representative in Seaside Library, there were grown men and women yelling at each other about losing their jobs at Wanna Mill, Cap and Trade, the Spotted Owl, climate change. There's no plastic in the ocean. It was pretty ugly. Newspaper accounts say that most of the group adjourned to another city hall in another city, not Seaside, and that it's probably part of the timber unity crowd that is well organized. Not that there's anything bad about being organized. I've joined a lot of associations myself. But if you need to be clear in your messages. We all need to be clear in our messages and take the temperature down just a bit. I want you to consider the water part, especially with this upcoming Forest Water Protection Act that will be introduced. In my part of the world, my watershed is threatened because it's easier to sell off the lumber than to take care of the trees and pay for the land with trees on them. So that's my word. Part of the I'm through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Emerson, Chief Forest Authority, board members, for the record, Bill Cluding, Monmouth, Oregon. I'm here mainly today to talk about fish. If I may, I can't be here after noon, so I'll spill over into item number six, if I may. Quite a few years ago, I was the first one to testify at the Oregon State Capitol on the double-crested cormorant and the problem that that bird was creating in the Northwest. Literally millions and millions of small smolts was getting ate because of these birds. It took years to finally, when you go through Federal Fish and Wildlife, NOAA, Oregon Fish and Wildlife, Washington Fish and Wildlife, the Endangered Species Act, the whole bit, they finally put a program together to solve this double-crested cormorant problem. And I thought we did a good job, except now we know the survivors of these double-crested cormorants, when they finally broke up this 30 and 40,000 pairs, what they did, they went back to the small coastal streams. Now, I can tell you that Oregon has some of the prime habitat for raising fish, whether it's ocean going or local fish. What we've created now is when these smolts, we can hatch that egg out. We can hatch that egg. We can raise that smolt. But when that smolt starts downstream, that's when the problem starts. Now, when you look at the hundreds of seals and sea lions we have at the mouth of every one of these rivers, every one of them, those eat fish. Their prime food is the smolts going out and the larger salmon coming back to spawn. Now we're talking steelhead also. What happens, we can't get those adult fish back to Oregon. We have to get those fish back to Oregon into our streams so they can lay the eggs to start the whole cycle again. So I'll stop right there. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Imason and State Forester Doherty and members of the commission. I also want to acknowledge Commissioner Justice, who might have heard this testimony at the EQC meeting last week. My name for the record is Lisa Arkin. I'm the Executive Director of Beyond Toxics, a statewide environmental health and justice organization. And I come to you today to discuss the matter of herbicide spray on state forest lands that overlap with designated protected drinking watersheds. And you have in your packet this report here, which I'll refer to. So based on a public records request we did to the Department of Forestry, we received records that indicate that ODF makes common practice of spraying herbicides on land that overlaps with protected drinking watersheds and may impact drinking water for thousands of Oregonians. The majority of these clear cuts are treated with a tank mix of herbicides sprayed from helicopters. About 19,000 acres were sprayed in the Tillamook State Forest alone. And we've just submitted a case study on the Tillamook Forest. I'd like to say that I hope that you will invite me back at another time to put this topic on your agenda so I can present a more comprehensive and detailed report than I can today. About 76% of those 19,000 acres were aerially sprayed, and the other remaining 24% were ground sprayed. They all involved a tank mix of 3 to 5 chemicals. These lands that are overlapping are identified by the Department of Environmental Quality and Oregon Health Authority as designated protected drinking watersheds, and they recommend a 1,000-foot buffer to protect these streams. Under the Oregon Forest Practices Act, which is used to manage these forests, there's only a 60-foot protective buffer to protect drinking water streams. In brief, you might want to check out the maps in this report that give you more detail about where the sprays occur and what is being used. We recommend that the Board of Forestry adopt regulations to end herbicide sprays on state forest lands that overlap with protected drinking watersheds and phase out all aerial sprays on state forest lands because of the impacts from drift, volatilization, and runoff. I hope that I'll be able to present more detailed information to you at a future date. Thank you very much.